CITR 101.9 FM, also on the web, CITR.ca, in UBC, University of British Columbia, in Vancouver, Canada. Have our people contact your people, won't you?
Good afternoon. This is Valerio from CITR Radio 101.9 FM from UBC, Vancouver. Today is November 4th, 2014, and as every Tuesday, I'm replacing Linda of Give 'Em the Boot show for Italian community, Italian program. Ciao a tutti. Quest'oggi sono qui per presentare una intervista a Rod Manning. Rod Manning è un fondatore di Greenpeace, che nacque proprio qui a Vancouver nel 1971 e che quest'oggi ci terrà compagnia solo dopo questa prossima canzone. Just after this song we will call Rod for this interview, and now just listen this song. Imagine Dragons, Radioactive. Very nice song. Thank you, Rod, for this song. Still, we have to call Rod. Still is not in the line online, but first I want to play another song that Rod suggests to listen is by Ariana Grande, with Problem. And then after this song, we will start to talk with Rod and have interview. And today I want to focus on the interview on Rod's background, but even environmental issues that currently are in BC. For example, mountain poly mining problem, and we will talk about that. We will touch a little bit the topic of Great Bear Rainforest, and also I would like to touch the problem of oil pipeline in Burnaby and Vancouver. But first, let's listen Ariana Grande with Problem, which is one of the songs that our guest today suggests.
Ziggy Iggs, they got one more problem with you, girl. Hey.
This is Ariana Grande with Problem, and fit IG Azalea and Rod. He suggests and he recommended this song. Let's. Hey, Rod, are you on air? Hello, Rod. Rod, are you on air? I think Rod is not yet in the line. Probably there is some technical problem. Rod, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you clearly.
Awesome. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
And thank you to accept my invitation today at CITR Radio 101.9 FM here from UBC Vancouver. This is a Wild Not show. It's a show that is replacing the usual show that in this time playing is Give 'Em the Boot, the Italian program that usually Linda leads for Italian community here and for every Italian lovers. And for this reason, as every week, I want to say thank you to Linda to give me this space, this spot. I'm learning a new amazing work, like radio show, and also give me this opportunity to talk in English about environmental issues. That's why today we have here from not Vancouver, Rod Manning. Is it right?
I'm in North Vancouver, yes.
So, Rod, before to start our interview regarding environmental issues, I just would like to listen your story about your background, if you like.
Okay, a story. Well, when I was young, I sailed into a nuclear test zone twice. Both times the nuclear test was delayed. So I was about 20 years old at the time and was thrust into the ship that we were on. We named it Greenpeace. And after we came back from the test zone, we started up an organization called Greenpeace in Vancouver. So I'm one of the founders of Greenpeace International.
Wow, that's awesome. That's to me, it's amazing to have you here because I volunteered with Greenpeace since 2005. And, you know, to have this pleasure to interview one of the founders of Greenpeace, makes a lot of sense. I have no words to say thank you to be here. So how did you, I was not yet born in that period. I know Greenpeace was founded in 1971.
Actually, 1972 was when we actually incorporated the foundation.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. And it's true, Rod, that Greenpeace was founded on a ship.
Founded on a ship?
Yeah, I heard this. I don't know if it's true.
Well, I don't know if you could call it that. It's just that we were saying goodbye one day to each other, and we normally signed off. One way of saying goodbye was peace. And the friend of mine who was with me at the time said, "Oh, make that a green peace." And so we were at an organization meeting for the nuclear testing, and we all laughed at the goodbye sign, which was Greenpeace. So at that moment, we thought, gee, that's a pretty nice name. Why don't we name the ship that we're going to take into the nuclear test zone Greenpeace? And that's how we got started.
Right. So this is the truth.
Yeah.
So, Rod, then after this year, after to found the Greenpeace, what do you remember about that? What actions did you have for first action that you have that you remember, and also what was the main environmental campaign in that period, 1970s?
Well, in the 1970s, it was nuclear testing. The Americans were testing nuclear bombs in the Aleutian Islands, right on an earthquake fault zone. And that fault zone went right through Vancouver and Seattle and L.A. And when you start setting off nuclear bombs on a fault zone, you can set off a chain reaction. And that was the concern at the time. Also, there was nuclear testing in the South Pacific. So when we sailed into the nuclear test zone in Amchitka on the way back, we realized that we were successful in creating a lot of publicity, and the nuclear testing came to an end pretty soon after we had sailed into the area zone because of the amount of world focus on that area. So we decided to go down into the South Pacific, into the French nuclear testing. So we did that for 4 years, and that also came to an end. The atmospheric nuclear testing in the South Pacific was stopped by Vancouver Greenpeace. So by 1974, we had stopped two countries from nuclear testing. And so at that time, we moved into trying to stop whaling. And we didn't realize that at the time that, you know, it was going to take a long, long time to stop whaling. Matter of fact, I was just in the Antarctic the last winter, and I spent 4.5 months in the Antarctic trying to stop the Japanese whaling fleet from whaling. Now, whaling was, you know, was banned. The law was passed in 1982, came in effect in 1986, and no way commercial whaling was allowed on the planet after that. But when you have 3/4 of this planet covered by water and considered an international seas and an international park, there is no police officer out there to enforce the 15 or 16 international laws that govern the oceans. Matter of fact, there was over 16 laws back in 75. There's probably now hundreds of them on the books. But there's, when you have laws and you don't have a police force to invest to enforce those laws, then you don't have any laws. You just have chaos and a wild west out there. Anything goes. So even though there was a ban on commercial whaling, Japan continued to whale. And they were whaling last winter when we were down there, and they got about 200 to 300 whales. But they wanted to catch over, you know, 1,200 whales, and we stopped them from getting that many whales.
Right.
Now, that wasn't Greenpeace last winter. That was a navigator on board the Sea Shepherd ship, the Steve Irwin. Now, Sea Shepherd has taken over, and where Greenpeace was dealing with whales many years ago, they gave up on the actual direct action against whales. About 6-7 years ago. So Sea Shepherd has taken over saving the whales in the Antarctic and around the world. But Greenpeace is still working on trying to save the Arctic Ocean from a lot of other issues, climate change and oil drilling.
Right. So that's very interesting. Coming back to this time, like currently time, just today I was coming to the radio, to UBC by bus, and for some reason I found two newspaper, local newspaper, very important newspaper on the bus, not Free Press. And in both I found a very important environmental news. But one of these that I want to focus on now is Great Bear Rainforest Agreement. And on this article, I can see that one of the writers is Eduardo Souza from Greenpeace, Greenpeace Vancouver.
He's the forestry campaigner for Greenpeace Canada.
Yes, and he was here just last month talking about Great Bear Rainforest. And I was just before to go on with our interview, I want to read these few words. And then I want to listen, Rod, what you think about that. Okay. It's time to fully deliver Great Bear Rainforest Agreements. Action needed. BC government must focus leadership resources on seeing initiatives through. People around the world care deeply about British Columbia's Great Bear Rainforest because of its spectacular natural beauty, rich First Nations cultures, and their hope that thriving communities and intact rainforests are about to become reality in this region. The public's optimism that this is possible is built on the Great Bear Rainforest Agreements announced in February 2006 by the provincial government, First Nations, a group of logging companies and environmental groups, which marked a breakthrough after years of land use conflicts and were celebrated around the world. Because the Great Bear Rainforest is not just a local problem, but it's a global problem. Because the Great Bear Rainforest is a global treasure and its fate a global concern. I'm Italian, I'm not Canadian, but I can tell this. And there are 8 years now that this agreement was talked 8 years ago, and there are even eight, as this newspaper, Vancouver The Sun, report, 8 points, very important. One, there is only one Great Bear Rainforest. Two, we urgently need a model for an economy that respects the limits of nature. Three, success is paramount to build trust that collaboration can work. Four, it is a model for a new relationship between First Nations and the province. Five, one of the best carbon banks on the planet will be protected. Six, it matters to BC's coastal forest industry. Seven, we will inspire action to protect the lands of the world. Eight, the world is watching because it's a global problem. So what do you think, Rod? Then after this, we will back to your interview about your interest. But I'm sure you also in that very involved.
Yes, I've been involved in Great Bear Rainforest for actually, it was the coining of the word Great Bear Rainforest, which came from Peter McAllister. Peter McAllister coined the word Great Bear Rainforest, and we in Greenpeace incorporated it and took it on in 1994. Now, that's a long time ago. That's 20 years ago that the environmental movement has been battling to create a park where the Great Bear Rainforest is today. It's a beautiful area, and it should be a park. Whether it will be a park now or a few years from now is still up in the air. The fact is that we have two trains of thought right now. The university students that are probably listening to this right now will not live past their prime. I mean, they won't live past 60, 70 years old. They will be dead when they're 60 and 70 years old. And the reason why is the planet will not be able to sustain them. Because we are now heading into climate change. We are now heading into a huge amounts of problems that are going to come home to roost within the next 50 years, easy. Probably within the next 40 years, you will see complete breakdown. So I'm not the only one that said this. David Suzuki has also said this too. The fact is that we have to save pools of biodiversity on this planet, and the Great Bear Rainforest is one of those pools. If you don't preserve these little areas that have biodiversity in them, then when you hit this dark age, when you hit this big problem of collapse, civilization collapse, because of numerous environmental issues, then you've got a situation where you cannot shorten the dark age. You cannot. Your dark age starts to linger on for 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years, and that will just probably destroy all of mankind for sure. So it is in our best interest to keep the Great Bear Rainforest as a park, as a preserved area. The amount of diversity in the Great Bear Rainforest is amazing. There's 1,800 species in a forest that in a small area, they take a 100 square yards, and you can actually find 1,800 species of bacteria and small animals and small insects in that area. It's a very diverse area. So those things are all required to reseed the planet if we do get into a, which I believe we will, get into a real terrible situation. So that's the purpose of Greenpeace. The purpose of Greenpeace is to save pools of biodiversity on this planet before the Dark Age hits us. And now, why isn't it being saved? It's one of the big reasons is because even the liberals, even though they've said they don't want to see pipelines go across British Columbia, they're secretly trying to find ways to get oil from Alberta to the West Coast. They definitely want to have LNG brought to the West Coast also. So, and it's very easy once you get a gas pipeline to switch it over to an oil pipeline. So they're one and the same. And the one of the areas that are blocking the oil pipelines is the Great Bear Rainforest. Another one is the First Nations in this province, and then another one is the massive environmental movement, which has been given the social license from British Columbians to protect our coast. So, you know, the idiots we have in Victoria, they're out of touch with reality. So that's my wrap-up for Great Bear Rainforest. Did that make any sense to you?
Yes. The Great Bear Rainforest is twice the size of Belgium. It's huge.
It is, but it's not. I mean, I've gone up and down the coast there 20, 30 times and been inside the Great Bear Rainforest. I once lived in a treehouse for a couple of weeks in a spawning channel where there was 46 grizzly bears, and I never felt so much alive in my whole life as that moment. There was just so much life around me, and every moment there was just, it was like being in a jungle. It's those moments that we, you know, those are the kind of areas we need to save. We cannot let them be plundered and covered in oil, and that's what we're concerned about right now is these big tankers. Like just last week, we had a tanker lose control, and it was heading for the rocks on the west coast of British Columbia. And if it wasn't for a U.S. sub, a U.S. tug, sorry, that came to the rescue, that whole coast would have been covered in oil. And you only get one chance. Once you get one, you know, you don't even get one chance. Once you have an oil tanker wreck up on the coast, it's there for thousands and thousands of years, and you can ruin the whole ecology of an area. So,
right. So just breaking that to our interview about you, Rod.
Yeah.
Here today at 101.9 FM on CITR Radio from UBC Vancouver, we have Rod Marining from North Vancouver. He is one of the Greenpeace founders in 1972. And just a few days ago, I had the chance to read on Common Ground a very, very interesting and very excellent article about Mountain Polly, the Mountain Polly mine disaster, written by Rod Marring. So, Rod, what you can update about that? What you can let us know? What you can let CITR listeners know about this big problem?
Well, it's a mining. It's the world's worst mining disaster. It's here in British Columbia. We're supposed to be civilized, and there's lots of other countries that don't have laws, but we have. We're supposed to have the best laws, but we don't. We have the world's worst mining disaster here in British Columbia. We have the largest mining disaster in the world in our backyard, and it happened to be on a beautiful lake. It's one of the biggest lakes in British Columbia, called Quesnel Lake. It's in the mountain in the Cariboo area by Williams Lake. And you know, there's the lake is over 100 kilometers long. One arm of it is over 100 kilometers. So I would say it's nearly 200 kilometers. That's huge. You know, if you go around the whole perimeter of the lake, it's got a huge area that's beautiful and diverse. And scientists came from all over the world, and they would fly into Quesnel Lake and get water samples, because this lake was known as the most pristine lake in the world. And it was destroyed over a period of a day or a few days, when we had, I now estimate, probably 50,000, where is the amount here? It's just amazing amounts here.
Yes.
It was, 10 billion liters. Well, we'll just go with the cubic meters. There's something like 25 million cubic meters of toxic silt and toxic sludge
That's
that
crazy.
Came down. That's 25 million cubic meters. That's a huge amount of heavy metals.
I was in Cariboo just last year. I had this amazing experience in the wild. I slept 9 days in a very nice cabin in the wild life. It's so amazing area. Just 1 hour and a half or 2 hours from up to Williams Lake. The place is called Horsefly. It's a small town. And I saw three moose. One was in the first morning that I was there, early in the morning. I wake up because I wanted, you know, just see around if I can. I could observe some animals, some, you know, crazy cool gift that nature can show. And I met a big moose. And then just 2 days before to leave, in the morning, I went, it was like 6 a.m., I went in a small lake, just see around some birds, and just beside me, like just few meters beside me, a big moose was drinking in the lake, and a cub, and an amazing baby with her. And they observed me, they watched me for like few seconds, and then they shout, and then they ran away in the forest. It was for me this big show, one of the amazing show that in Cariboo you can see. It's amazing. And now when I read your article on Common Ground, it was like, that's totally crazy. Like just reading arsenic, it's incredible crazy. I mean, how people can do that? Like, that's like to kill. The living things. It's very, very upset.
Yeah, it's we're changing the province, British Columbia. We're changing it radically. My ancestors came from Italy. My grandmother, she left Italy in 1914, and it was quite an amazing trek for her because she came by herself. She was only 14, 15 years old at the time, and she left Fano, Italy, took the train to Rome, gone on a ship, and came across the Atlantic Ocean to Montreal, and then took a train from Montreal to Winnipeg, and there she met her sister, and that's where she lived for the rest of her. Well, she as soon as she got married, she moved to Vancouver shortly after that. So my grandparents came from Italy over 100 years ago, and this is the what I'm getting at is here is that when I was young, this whole province was organic. I mean, you couldn't go to the store and buy organic food because everything was organic. We didn't have pesticides. We didn't have heavy metals. And today, with the Mount Polly, for example, I need to kind of give you an idea of the scope, why it's the worst mining disaster, because just in one year, Imperial Metals Corporation dumped thousands of tons of zinc. They dumped phosphorescence, manganese, along with 138 tons of cobalt, 326 tons of antimony, 400,000 kilograms of arsenic. You know, these are just huge amounts of lead and selenium and, you know, like a mercury, for example. You got roughly, you're looking at probably 16 cars or 16 trucks full of, that's how much heavy mercury was dumped in one year in the tailings pond, and all that came out, and it ended up in Quesnel Lake and Hazeltine Creek. So we're talking huge amounts of heavy metals that get into the Fraser River, that's used for irrigation, and then gets into our food supply system, and it affects each and every person in the Lower Mainland. Eventually, it will, and it will bioaccumulate in your body. And eventually, it will start to cause havoc. And unless you're getting, kiltillation, which is a rubber tube up your bum, and they wash out your intestines to try to get rid of a heavy metal, that's a pretty tough way of trying to get rid of heavy metal. It's best not to get it in our system in the first place. So British Columbia now is joining the rest of the world with heavy-duty toxicity. So when I was in Italy, for example, I was surprised that they don't have that anymore. They don't have the mining. They don't have the pesticide use anymore. They're very ecologically minded. Matter of fact, when I was in the small fishing village of Fano,
how is this village called?
It's called Fano. Fano.
Fano. Oh, it's famous actually.
Yeah, but on the Adriatic Sea. And I went walking along the seawall there, and I stopped and talked to the fishermen, and I was shocked. You know, here each fisherman had three or four big fish in a 5-pound, in a 5-gallon bucket. So you could go fishing and catch, about 25 pounds of fish if you fished all day. That's a lot. You could feed your family easy on that, just off standing on the shoreline. So that is an amazing accomplishment for Italy to still have fish in the Adriatic Sea.
Right. So now, when you've been in Italy just last month?
Yes.
Wow. That's nice. You've been just in Fano, or you?
I traveled all around.
Okay.
And saw some of my relatives there and that. I just wanted to point out that it is that British Columbia, you know, people think that British Columbia is the pristine wilderness here. We're losing that pretty fast. It doesn't take much before it's contaminated. And this one Mount Polly mine disaster really opened up a huge assault on each and every person in British Columbia. They don't realize it, but these heavy metals are going to start to bioaccumulate. You know, you go, even when you buy some organic wine, for example, if that organic orchard is watered with Fraser River water, then that's not going to be organic anymore. And when you buy organic, they don't test for heavy metals. They just test for pesticides. They just, oh, there's no pesticides in there. But heavy metals are worse than pesticides. So you have to change your thinking.
Yes. So from Italy last month, you told me that you heard something very, very nice song. Which is it? The Bass by Meghan Trainor?
Yes, it's one of those songs that just transcends political boundaries and goes into 100 countries. And I guess a lot of women can relate to it, and so can a lot of men. So you want to play it now?
Let's play now.
Okay.
You know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass. Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size 2, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. Cause I got that boom boom that all the boys chase, and all the right junk in all the right places. I see the magazine working out Photoshop. We know that shit ain't real. Come on now, make it stop. If you got beauty, just raise them up. Cause every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. Yeah, my mama, she told me, don't worry about your size. She says boys like a little more booty to hold at night. And no, I won't be no stick figure silicone Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into, then go ahead and move along. Because you know I'm all about that. No trouble, I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, hey. I'm bringing booty back. Go ahead and tell them skinny bitches that. No, I'm just playing, I know y'all think you're fat. But I'm here to tell you, every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that.
Meghan Trainor, all about the bass.
Bass.
All about that bass. That nice song, actually. So you heard this in Italy, right?
Yes, I did. I heard it in a family, small little Italian town.
Wow.
And, you know, she's only like, I just find it amazing that, you know, you can, there's still these stories, you know, usually musicians, you know, they, it takes a long time, you know, to make it in the, and not everyone makes it, makes money at this, at that art form. It's, and so, Megan made it, she just wrote that song and it took off, and she went from owning nothing and just not having any money to having millions of dollars within a few months of her releasing that song. So, yeah, it's I always liked rags to riches stories, you know.
Yeah, that's lovely. It's a lovely story. I like it. May, you said her song hit number one is over 100 countries, right?
Yes, it hit the number one song in over 100 countries.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I didn't think there's, you know, Italy is, you know, they speak Italian in Italy. I mean, I was surprised. They love American music, though.
Oh, yeah, we
pop
love
music, so.
Yeah. I remember, for example, other groups, like other singers that now maybe are not anymore, like, very on the top, but for example, Barbie, the Barbie band, 20 years ago or 15 years ago, it was an American band and like was a big success that start in Italy, mm-hmm. in Europe. Anyways, so Rod, thank you for this song, actually, very nice. We also listened to Imagine Dragons' song Radioactive, mm-hmm. Beginning of the show, and the other one, Ariana Grande, which sounds Italian, actually, Italian name, but I don't know if it's Italian, with Problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And why these songs, this song mean to you?
Oh, it's not, there's not an intellectual thing to it, you know, I mean, it's really, pop music is just, I mean, I used to be a real rock fan, but pop music now has gone into so many different genres. I mean, you can listen to pop music, and it's unique today. It's some of that sound, the sounds coming out of the pop music industry is sounds I've never heard before, and it's very unique, and the arrangements are unique. So I think pop has, you know, I don't really call it pop, but it's some of it's hip hop. Some it's, there are different genres there, and
yeah.
So I listened to 94.5 and 95.3, the two radio stations that pretty well cover that kind of stuff in the Lower Mainland.
Right, and this is CITR Radio 101.9 FM from UBC Vancouver. Today with us is Rod Meierning. Is pronouncing good?
Meierning, yeah.
Meierning. And Rod is one of the amazing Greenpeace founder. In 1972, they founded this amazing organization, Greenpeace, that now is international. I think in 1975, Greenpeace became international, right?
Yes. Well, it slowly grew in there. When we tackled the French nuclear testing in the South Pacific, we did have an office in New Zealand, an office in England, London, England, and Vancouver. So we had three countries in 1972 starting up. So it pretty well. It's now has. I think there's 55 countries now that have Greenpeace offices in, so it's quite large. And I was just with the Greenpeace delegation at the International Whaling Commission in Slovenia just last month also. So that's after the meeting, I went into Italy and toured Italy and dropped into Venice and watched George Clooney wander around and with his new bride. He's now 50-something years old, and he just got married for the first time. So he's got a tough life ahead of him now.
That's really nice. Now, back into the newspapers that I was reading this morning.
Yeah.
There were other two other articles, very important, both regarding oil problem. One was I was a little bit surprised on this picture. There is a man, a protester, under a car, seems like a very danger demonstration, but very symbolic for say no to Kinder Morgan to extend this oil business. And the other article still on oil, I can see some photographer in the picture, and a survivor for Kinder Morgan photographers, protesters opposed to the proposed Kinder Morgan pipeline who gathered on Burnaby Mount last week. Four of the protesters are being sued by the company. So I want to ask you, Rod, what do you think about this this problem, and what do you feel right now to tell to these people that are protest and also are in trouble with Kinder Morgan?
Well, you've got, this is all new. This is brought in by the BC Liberals. Are called slap suits. It wasn't allowed under the NDP, and the NDP brought in legislation saying corporations can't abuse the law, and this is what it is, this blatant abuse of our legal system, where a corporation can take some small guy, he's got a home in downtown Vancouver, and sue that individual for millions of dollars, and so he loses his home, he loses everything, all because he spoke his mind against a pipeline. He doesn't want to see 500 oil tankers going out of Burrard Inlet. He doesn't want to see our beaches covered in oil. And that's a perfectly reasonable right to do so. But under the BC Liberals, when they lifted the slap suit law that was in place, they allowed corporations to bully, just plain and simply bully the public. I don't think it will fly. It's never been tested. In some ways it could be tested here, and we'll find out in a court case. But this wasn't allowed 12 years ago, and corporations got way too much power in this in British Columbia. Matter of fact, I would nationalize Kinder Morgan right off the bat. I would say, forget it. We're cutting you off. You're going to have to leave your offices. We're going to nationalize the whole oil industry that Kinder Morgan has set up in the Lower Mainland here. And that's what should happen, because Kinder Morgan does not have a social license to do what they're doing, right. And they're acting like tyrants. And their business license to operate in the province of British Columbia should be yanked. There should be no business license for Kinder Morgan to operate in British Columbia. Matter of fact, the province of British Columbia just should say, it's time for you to leave the province and leave all your assets. You want to sue us? Go ahead. That's what I would do if I was in the government of British Columbia.
Yes. Rod, two more questions before to close our show, because just a few minutes left, and then we will play the last song, Wild Flowers.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, right now, are you involved with Greenpeace? How you are involved with Greenpeace as founder? And
I talked to the executive director. I'm in communication with Sea Shepherd, and I'm in communication with Greenpeace. I'm what you call a I go into both organizations. I like being on both their ships.
Yeah.
And I have the ability to do so. So
yes.
They're both doing good work. Some are, you know, some are focused on whales. Some are focused on the oil industry. Some are focused on Arctic. Some are focused on the Antarctic.
Yes.
We need as many environmental groups as possible. So I'm happy for, you know, to have them both happening.
Yes.
So I work with both of them. But, you know, I practice what is called eco-jiu-jitsu, which means you have to look at all the environmental issues happening in the province, and certain ones will flare up, and that's where you have to apply your energy at a certain time, at a certain moment. You have to be the right person at the right time, at the right place. And when you do that, then you can affect change a lot more with your energies.
Right. And then the other question is, what is for you ecobc.org, I saw at the end of the article on Common Ground.
Yeah, that website went down. We had a problem with the website, so we had to refinance it, and it's coming up in the next little while. But that's the British Columbia Environmental Network, which I'm the chair of. We operate LandWatch, which is an internal communication. So we are behind-the-scenes communications operation for the environmental movement in British Columbia. So we monitor everything. We make suggestions to environmental groups to get involved in various different issues, and then we try to coordinate it. And so we are trying to fundraise. We're going to be fundraising for the court case, which is going to be happening tomorrow. So if you have time tomorrow, do you want to go down to the courthouse, the provincial Supreme Courthouse, to courthouse number 55. They should be operating there around 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. There they will have Kinder Morgan, and we'll be suing five individuals who are blockading the pipeline right now.
Right. So www.ecobc.org. And now let's listen to Wildflowers, Tom Petty. Why you choose this song, Rod?
Oh, it's just a nice, I like wildflowers, and it's the best to apply to beautiful women, too. Sometimes women are like beautiful wildflowers.
Yes.
Okay.
So let's listen it here on CITR Radio 101.9 FM, Wild Knot Show. Thank you, Rod,
okay. To
be here, and hopefully to have you here in the future again. And with you, listeners, we will see next week at the same time, 2 p.m., here and replacing Give 'Em the Boot, Linda's show. Ciao, Linda. Linda is in Europe and she will be back in few months. Linda, we miss you a lot, and please come back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bonanza, planned obsolescence, not all conspiracies are false, doctors, conflict of interest, the end of everything, UN climate change report, what happened to Olivia Chow in Toronto? Let's begin episode 272.
It's time for Radio Freethinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. Place for reason and reality.